Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description. Hey, friend, I'm Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw Countouts. Pro Wrestling Countdown Show on our channel at youtube.com/Stephen Larson. Also available wherever fine podcasts are available.
Correct.
Including the iTunes. We're in the 70s at some point today. Earlier. So that's good. So yesterday's episode of Countout, we counted down the best rematches in pro wrestling. Why did we do that?
Because Lesnar Goldberg 2, their rematch from WrestleMania 20.
That's right.
Happens today.
Happens today. So it's exciting. Unless, of course, you're watching this tomorrow, in which case it happened yesterday.
Or if you're watching it Tuesday, it happened 2 days ago.
Correct.
Wednesday, 3 days ago.
Or at some point in the future, you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So today, of course, because yesterday we talked about the best rematches, today we're going to shit all over people's hard work and effort, Larson. We're going to talk about the shittiest rematches, the worst ones in pro wrestling history. And here we go. Number 10.
10.
Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant at Main Event 1988.
Saturday Night Main Event. As we talked about this extensively on yesterday's list because it was also on that one.
Historically speaking, and for a young Larson, this belongs on the best of list.
I even watched it the other night, and it was still a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, but it's so screwy.
Yeah.
That fucking ending is so weird.
I know, but it set up so much good stuff.
Two Dave Hebners?
Yeah, one was Earl.
One was Earl? Two Dave... What the fuck was that?
Did you notice when Hogan threw Dave Hebner out of the ring?
Mm-hmm.
He launched him.
He did.
Oh my gosh.
And then the camera looked down at him and he's holding his back because he fucked it up for reals. No, I know. It's such a weird, screwy ending. Like, the match itself, it's fun, but it's not like matches today. It's
no.
all slow and
I mean,
weird
Hogan,
and plotting.
Hogan was never a good wrestler. Andre.
He wasn't, as evidenced by this list, because there's a lot of Hogan here.
Andre by then was well past his prime. He was in pretty bad shape physically.
Yeah. And there is also the stink of DiBiase really should. And to his credit, they were planning on having him win. I think the belt legit instead of Macho Man after this. And he said no because what were they going to do there? Because he preferred the alternative storyline. I forget what it was, but, the twin ref thing was just like, what the hell am I watching right now?
That was actually pretty creative for 1980s wrestling, though.
You're right. You could look. I will let you defend the shit out of this because you're right. It is so much fun.
It's
to watch.
Tons of fun. The crowd is beyond excited.
Yeah.
And it's easy to get caught up in that energy
yeah.
of the crowd and the creative storytelling and all that and the overbooking.
Oh yeah.
They have to do all that to cover up the fact that. Unto itself in a vacuum.
Yeah.
If you just watch the wrestling in the ring, it's not good.
I like this. So we got our notes from our researcher, Stephen Wilds, a.k.a. Scoops. I love this note here. Hogan went to the top rope at one point. Why? And got slammed. But then Andre missed the headbutt, leaving both men wriggling around the ring in one of the worst moments.
Yeah, that was a little confusing. The camera work during that segment wasn't good either.
Oh, I know.
Because it kind of looked like Andre fell over for no reason.
Yeah. And I like this note here also. This is how they chose to end Hogan's 4-year reign.
A creative, interesting way of doing it.
The twins is just a weird thing. It's so weird.
It is.
It's very weird.
It's different.
It's like, no, I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
Another ref that looks exactly like that ref. And I like that. I love that if you read the lips of the Hebners, they're both claiming to be Dave Hebner.
No, I'm the real Dave.
I'm the real Dave.
No, Hebner. I'm the real
I'm
Dave.
I'm the real Dave.
I'm the real Dave.
It's not... Dude, you're my twin brother. What the fuck are you doing here?
Yeah.
You know, it's I'm the real
Dave
Hebner.
Because afterwards they said one of them had plastic surgery to look like the other one.
Oh, is that what they said?
Yeah,
okay.
So.
Oh, that's so weird.
I think Scoops mentions that in the notes.
And then, but they're. Okay, so there's this, though. There's also this thing that I was curious about. Hogan tosses the evil Hebner, Earl, out of the ring. Why? What prompted it? Do you remember?
Because he.
He was able to ascertain which was real and which was fake. Why? because
the real one punched the fake one.
Other way around. The fake one healed on the real one, punched him, and that led Hogan to believe that the guy who punched the fake one, the evil one, Earl punched Dave, and that led Hogan to believe that Earl was fake.
Yes.
Which was true. But why would he think that? Why wouldn't he just think that Dave, being pissed off at an imposter, is going to punch him out?
I don't know.
How did Hogan know he was throwing out the right guy?
I don't know.
That's my question.
Hold on. I'm going to make sure I'm writing this plastic surgery thing, because I thought that was the case.
I hope it is. That'd be an odd twist.
I think Hogan just claimed or thought there was plastic surgery involved.
That's great. See, that...
Oh, wait. No, maybe... Cause I think the idea was that DiBiase paid one of them the imposter, I guess, to get plastic surgery to look like the real Dave Hebner.
That's kind of my other beef with it, is that if DiBiase went to all this trouble, you would think that he would have found in the rule books where it said that the title wouldn't be vacated after all this trouble and money he's gone to.
No,
and
I know.
Just vacate his title? It's easier just to win the damn thing straight up. Put all that money into a better personal trainer, DiBiase. Number nine. Kane versus Undertaker.
WrestleMania 20. There is a...
Sponsored by Snickers.
There is a cup. This match and then their Hell in a Cell match are both not that great.
You know, it's hard to... It's funny because when you think of the Brothers of Destruction, you have, like, generally, it's fond. You know, you want to see these guys get back together. You know, you like Undertaker and Kane.
Yeah.
They go well together, like peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
But if you actually break down their matches... you kind of, they're not very good.
No.
You know, I don't know. I haven't watched the WrestleMania 14.
Sorry, I got conclusive evidence.
Oh, goodness.
Here's a word here about the last entry. Hogan accused DiBiase of paying one of the Hebners to get plastic surgery to look like the other. But it turns out that there was an evil twin brother, which was Earl. So no actual plastic surgery. I'm going to make sure this is...
I just love...
This show has an informational component. I'm going to make sure the information is right.
I just love that Hogan made that claim completely baseless. You know? Like, Hogan had no idea, and the only thing he can come up with is that he got a man for one match to alter his entire face to look like Dave Hebner, who's not a pretty man. That's Hogan for you. I like that Hogan. Yeah, okay, brother. And then I'm going to think that he got plastic surgery. That's a jump to conclusion. Hey, brother, you cloned him? Brother? No, it's just his twin brother, dude. And he kind of doesn't even really look that much like him.
Yeah. Anyways. They're not identical twin brothers.
Anyways, we're talking about Kane versus Undertaker right now.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I haven't seen... I remember WrestleMania 14 fondly. Like, Kane was a good wrestler in his day. Mm-hmm. And Undertaker was too, obviously. Let's see here.
And as often as these two wrestled.
Yeah.
Both against each other and as tag partners.
But at this point, 6 years afterwards at WrestleMania 20, they're just kind of phoning in against each other, I think.
Could be.
Let's see here. We had... I like Scoops' notes here. Kane had previously buried his brother alive. Oh, so wait. Was this after... Buried Alive, was he an American Badass? And then he came back as the Dead Man? Oh, okay. All right. Let's see here. I like this. The Burning City and Kane's entrance looked great. Undertaker's had the return of Paul Bearer and his old gimmick. Yeah, okay, after the American Badass days. Because I just sort of went through the motions on this match. I sort of lost a little bit of it.
I remember watching it when it aired, but I don't remember much about it.
Exactly. You know, it's like nobody's ever going to think. Nobody ever thinks... Oh, man, Kane Undertaker, that was a great match.
Well, and we were watching this 14 years ago, 13 years ago. It wasn't like, all right, we're going to be talking about this on a show someday. We got to remember these details.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Yeah, I know. Let's see. It was only an 8-minute long match. And then apparently their feud just died at this. Like, this was it. It was just bring back the Undertaker as the Dead Man, which bummed me out because I like the American Badass.
No.
You know, I told you why I like American Badass.
Limp Bizkit.
No.
Oh.
Well, partially. He looked comfy. He just looked comfy. Even the fact that he got to ride his motorcycle to the ring and not have to walk all the way down, he looked comfy. And I really like that about American Badass character. But then, you know, if he likes Limp Bizkit, let him play Limp Bizkit. And then he's just...
Do you think that was his call, Limp Bizkit, or was that WWE management? Speculate.
I would think that he had at least input. Like they said, hey, This is the we're thinking.
Did they give him a mixtape and said you can pick one of these songs?
Yeah, maybe. We're thinking Kid Rock or Limp Bizkit. They're open to working with us. All right. Let me take a look. Ooh, this Roland song sounds good. You know why? Well, yeah, because I'm going to be on a motorcycle. Can I ride it to the ring so I don't have to walk all the way down there? Powers of Darkness. Number eight.
Eight.
The Rock versus John Cena, part two.
Twice in a lifetime.
Twice in a lifetime. Twice in two lifetimes. Yeah, supposed to be once in a lifetime. This bugs the living shit out of me. Larson.
This is where you're going to rant. I'm going to sit here and listen.
CM Punk was one of our greatest champions in the modern era. And they jobbed this guy. He had over 400-day run with the title. Was doing amazing things with Paul Heyman and without. And just so that they could up the stakes and give The Rock one last run with the title, they jobbed CM Punk out over two consecutive pay-per-views because he lost it to the Rock at the Rumble and then lost the rematch like immediately after, I think, in the next pay-per-view. So that was crap. And then they didn't even let Punk into the triple threat aspect of the match. Imagine you get to keep that once-in-a-lifetime tag for that first one. And then for all the wrestling marks out there, because no wrestling fan gave a shit about this. It was a sideshow attraction. People want to see Punk. Put Punk in there with Rock and Cena. And then you've got something different. And you're elevating Punk, who can make more money.
But
I always remember from WrestleMania 14, that poster. You had Austin, who was like not in the mainstream yet. But they had Austin and Tyson matching up. We knew, wrestling fans knew, Mike Tyson and Steve Austin were not fighting, but you see those guys' face on a poster, and then who else is there? Oh, HBK, because the wrestling fans love that guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so they could have done the same thing here. Rock, Cena, Punk. Punk for the wrestling marks. Punk is the guy that people are going to be rooting for. And fuck it. He can lose the match, but he gets to main event WrestleMania, and so he can never say after that point,
yep,
make me, I want a main event WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That itch has been scratched.
Yeah.
Now, if at that point he
says, I now want to win the belt in the main event WrestleMania.
Then it's like, okay, Punk, you did enough. You don't have to do everything. We've got other fish to fry.
Yeah. Punk and Cena did have a really good match on Raw after Cena won the Rumble and Punk lost the belt because Punk was like, hey, no, I want your spot, Cena. And they had a really good match on Raw to determine that.
Yeah, I know, but you always knew.
Oh, you knew Cena was going to win.
Always knew that shit was going to go down.
Yeah.
So, just ridiculous.
I kind of wonder if this match may have been better if apparently The Rock got hurt pretty early on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He tore some muscles.
Yeah. It says Rock is, according to Scoops' notes, Rock is supposed to be on Raw the next night, but suffered from legitimate torn muscles and tendons at and around his pelvis. Near his junk.
I think he tore an abdominal muscle or something.
Causing him to fly back home. Yep, and Scoops agrees with me. I think CM Punk should have been in this match for very short. Punk could have like made a really good story out of this match. Are you kidding me? That dude back in the day, back then, he still loved wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine having two huge stars. He could have done something with that.
Imagine if the spotlight was on Cena and Rock, the rematch, and Punk's like, hey, I was champion for 400 days.
I know.
Where's my respect?
I know.
Could have been great.
Was Heyman with Punk at the time?
Yeah. Because this was when Punk wrestled Undertaker.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. And Paul, tell me you wouldn't want Paul Heyman in there with The Rock. You got four of the best promo men.
I know. That could have been so good.
It could have been so good. It could have been so good, man. But nope. Can't do it. Not going to do it. Moving on. Number seven.
Seven.
Oh, God. Bret Hart versus Yokozuna. The fucking WWE at the time. WWF at the time was just... Especially right here. This is the first WrestleMania without Hogan. And man, they had no idea, no clue what they were doing.
Nope.
They had Yokozuna in there, and he was just slow and weird.
It seemed like this WrestleMania, the next one, 10-11, they brought in a ton of celebrities.
Yeah.
Because this one had Burt Reynolds, Jenny Garth. Yeah. The following year was, I believe, Pam Anderson
and Jenny McCarthy. Yeah. And then this one also had, of course... was it this one? Yeah, because I feel like in the same pay-per-view, The Luger-Yoko one.
Yeah.
They had Donnie Wahlberg.
That's right.
And Up All Night's Rhonda Shearer. I had the biggest crush on her.
I remember you told me that before.
And then I get on Twitter and she's a Trump guy. Anyways. You're right. It's funny because like Burt Reynolds. Did you watch Burt Reynolds like his intro?
Yeah.
Just didn't give a shit. So that was pretty funny. Roddy Piper looked great though. Piper always looked great though. So he was the Piper was the guest referee.
And this match is a rematch from the previous WrestleMania, mm-hmm. WrestleMania 9,
right,
which saw Bret Hart lose the title to Yokozuna.
And then Hulk Hogan challenged him and picked it up real quick.
Yeah.
In like a 3-minute match. Best thing about this match by far was Jim Cornette's outfit. It was amazing. It was like gold trim. It was like black and gold trim. Hold on. I want to bring it up just to look at it again. It was amazing. Jim Cornette was everywhere. Look at this shit.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Remember that?
Yeah.
It's so great. He's such a big, doughy guy. It's great. Bret Hart. The crazy thing about this is that... So, Scoops' notes here. Wait, was it Scoops' note? No, I think it was Wikipedia. Whatever. It was obvious they were pushing the shit out of Bret Hart.
Yes.
New face of the company.
Yeah.
Because of Hogan's absence. So, why is it the finish of this match wasn't... Granted, trying to get Yokozuna in the sharpshooter isn't going to happen. It wasn't Bret Hart winning thanks to anything Bret Hart did.
Yeah.
It was Yokozuna trying to do something from the second rope and then acting like that hurt him. He slipped or something and it just didn't look right. He slipped, fell. Bret Hart got the pin, wins the title. What the shit is that? Why are you making Bret Hart look weak? Because for one thing, he lost to Owen earlier, which I thought was cool. Everybody, that's a great match.
Yeah,
and it set up a great feud between Bret.
And they had a really good steel cage match.
Yes, yeah. And what a grab! That's a great booking decision to make. Have Bret Hart early in a match lose, have him pick up the title in the end.
Similar to Seth Rollins losing at WrestleMania 31 to Randy Orton, to cash in later in the night.
Exactly. So you have Owen pissed off at the end. It was great because at the end, and the funny thing is, at the end, they do that thing. Vince was obsessed with the locker room hoisting up the winner of a Yokozuna match because it's the same thing with Lex Luger.
Yeah.
This time, Bret Hart actually wins a title.
Yeah.
And so the face locker room comes out and you're looking at the face locker room and you're like, they had nobody. They had nobody. I mean, Razor Ramon was out there. He's great. We love him.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3 kids out there. He looks like a 12-year-old. You had Tatanka, which I never understood. You had Macho Man, and his WrestleMania 10 was his last time there. It was just really weak. It was just a really, really weakened state of affairs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not good. Yokozuna, terrible. But apparently Yokozuna was like a big, Vince loved Yoko. And every anecdote, every shoot interview I can see where people talk about Yokozuna, the locker room loved him.
Yeah.
He was a big locker room leader guy.
Yeah.
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 So, I don't know. Good for Yokozuna, not good for wrestling.
Well, I mean, they booked him as a monster heel for 2-3 years.
And Luger, of course. They were trying to push a shit out of Luger.
Yeah.
But I think Luger was pretty much dead at this point because of that SummerSlam.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to his match with Yoka.
Yeah.
With Yoko later on.
Oh, you're going to take issue with this one.
Yeah, man.
Number 6. Halftime Heat. Super Bowl halftime. Rock versus Mankind empty arena match.
Apart from one shot, the point of view shot from the forklift lowering.
No.
This was a fun match.
This is crap.
It's fun.
It looked like a Saturday Night Live skit.
But it was Saturday Night Live skits are supposed to be fun. This was fun.
It's so bad. I like this. The sound was a huge issue with the echoing and lack of crowd sounds. I love Scoop's notes here. Let's see here. Because he's right here. These two, they had an absolutely epic Royal Rumble I Quit match preceding this.
Okay, I take issue with this.
Go ahead.
The nearly 20-minute match shows two good superstars in a very planned out bout where they beat each other mercilessly, but the creativity just wasn't enough to carry it out. Oh, sorry, I misread that. It's fine. I thought when I first read this, it wasn't creative. I was like, they fought each other with popcorn.
Yeah, yeah.
Very creative.
I know. I like this here. Vince McMahon on commentary, possibly the best part. Let's see here. I have to love. Yeah, I did love as The Rock took the headset from him. It just didn't feel like a serious match.
I don't think it was supposed to be a serious match. It was supposed to be fun.
Wasn't it for the title, though?
Yeah.
Was there a title change here?
Yeah, Mankind wins.
See, you're not supposed to have a title change in a fun match.
Why not?
It needs to be serious.
No, fun.
The Rock threw Mr. Sacco in an oven at one point.
Yeah, that was great.
So bad. Once they go into the office, the match slows down a lot. Well, that happens in 2K17, too.
Yeah.
of course. Another note here from Scoops. McMahon has a creepy line about the woman in the office. Ah, oh, Vince. Of course, this was the highest viewed rated episode of Sunday Night Heat ever. And then it was followed up at St. Valentine's Day Massacre, St. Valentine's Massacre.
Fun. A lot of fun spots.
Awful. Just awful.
Fun.
Not, you know what? If there wasn't a title change, I might be on board with calling it fun.
Fun.
Not very good, though.
It's fun. A lot of fun. Come on, Steve. Loosen up.
Especially
yeah. After their match at Royal Rumble, the one that preceded this, which was so brutal.
Yeah, it was nasty. Hard to watch that one.
Foley got the huge cut in his head.
Hard to watch that one now.
Needed something with a little more levity.
That was one with all the chair shots.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was bad. Number five.
Five.
Talk about serious. The Montreal Screwjob.
Yeah.
Now, look, the match itself was proceeding just fine.
Yeah.
Looking to be a pretty decent match between, although even the match that they had allegedly told Hart how it was going to play out was still going to be sucky because it was going to be a dusty finish. It was going to be a screw job or a screwy finish with all sorts of DQs and people coming in and you know, interfering and shit. So no matter what, this is going to be a crappy match. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's fascinating. But it's also like if they're looking to present this illusion of a story, and then like the director just comes out and says, "All right, bad guy, win." Then it's just, what the fuck? What happened here? Why is Vince McMahon coming out? I thought he was usually in commentary. And why is he acting so mean?
Yeah.
And why did he just tell that guy to stop? I'd be like, I bought a ticket for this thing. Why are you just stopping the match and giving the belt to HBK? Bret Hart obviously didn't tap.
Yeah.
I'd be pissed off if I was in the crowd and didn't know what the fuck happened.
Yeah. This, of course, is a rematch, I think. They didn't have a bout between this or between WrestleMania 12, their epic 60-minute Iron Man match, and this one, right?
I don't know, but we can consider it a rematch.
Yeah, because they supposed to have a rematch at WrestleMania 13.
Okay, so Iron Man was 96?
Yeah.
April 96, this would have been November 97. Okay, I mean, whatever.
Because, WrestleMania 13, the original main event was supposed to be Bret and HBK. And right, Bret was supposed to get the belt back from Shawn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If the stories that have been told are true.
Yeah.
But you know, that was when Shawn lost his smile, hurt his knee.
Yeah, what a baby.
And
then Bret won it off Sid, is that right?
Yeah, the main event of WrestleMania 13 ended up being Sid and The Undertaker for the belt. Undertaker won.
Okay.
And then, Bret won it from The Undertaker at some point.
All right, that sounds right. They did after he lost his smile, didn't they do a tournament?
No, they had a Royal Rumble 97.
I thought it was a tournament at some point.
No, I don't think so. Because there was that Royal Rumble 97 was when Austin was kicking everybody's ass.
Yeah.
And then they had a screwy finish.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the final four competitors had a match at the next pay-per-view, which is In Your House, Final Four.
Mm.
And maybe that was to determine the champion or who was going to face the champion.
That could be, I don't know. It was all screwy. But anyways.
Oh, no, because at Royal Rumble 97, Shawn won the belt from Sid.
Okay, okay.
Because it was in San Antonio.
Okay. So, even if this match had... I mean, even if this match had finished the way that they had told Bret they were going to finish it, it was still crap.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not good. It's just... I understand it. It's fascinating to watch. It is absolutely fascinating to watch the walls come crumbling down into reality. But if you're sitting there as a fan watching this, you're like...
What's going on?
I watch this because it's fake. You know? Like, why are you keeping shit real?
This is supposed to be escapist entertainment.
I know.
Why are we seeing contract negotiations gone wrong played out on my television?
What? Why am I watching you rewrite this?
I know.
Why am I watching contract renegotiation gone wrong? That's good. Oh, that's fucking funny. why am I watching you rip a man's soul out in front of me? Oh, man. And then he spits in his face. This is gross.
And then
spits
in his face. Knocks Vince out backstage afterwards.
He's like, why is he telling WCW?
Oh, also, if people watching this haven't seen Bret Hart wrestling with shadows.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah, check that out.
Hitman Hart wrestling with
shadows.
It
covers a lot of stuff.
It's so good. It is so good.
It's pretty neat, serendipitous, that he had a documentary film crew following him around.
Oh, isn't that crazy?
I know.
Isn't that insane? I know. What the hell? And then, of course, you know, even sadder, Bret goes to WCW and he just seems dejected the entire time.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
I mean, he's misused right out of the gate.
Oh, it's awful. It's all. He just looks so, like, when that first promo he did, I think it was on a Nitro, and he just looks so dejected. He's like, I don't fucking want to be here.
Yep.
This isn't my
home. Then 3 months later, Shawn Michaels hurts his back.
Man, if I got $3.5 million or seven, whatever it was, it was a lot of money. It was a shit ton of money. Bischoff, I think, said $7 million. I thought I remember it being half that.
Maybe it was 2 years, $7 million. No, it had to be longer than 2 years.
Maybe it was 3.5 years. That could be it.
Okay.
I'd be happy as shit. I'd be coming down in some new Jordans, delivering a promo of my life. I'm like, fuck that place. They're Taco Tuesdays.
But Bret's a competitor.
Yeah, but it's all fake.
There's still competition between all the wrestlers backstage who can be the top guy.
The top performer.
Top
he can
guy.
Still perform really well with
yeah, I know.
Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. Number four. Rowdy Roddy Piper versus Mr. T WrestleMania 2. It didn't help that Roddy Piper fucking hated Mr. T anyways.
Yeah, he had a problem with, I think it was Mr. T not being a wrestler.
Yes.
And
Mr. T not sort of being a bit more humble, I think, when he came in. Oh, the Mr. T and humble are not two words that you're ever going to find together. I mean, come on. I mean, no, I know he gave his all of... I'm saying the persona of Mr.
Oh,
T.
Oh, yeah.
Does that come off as humble?
I know,
no.
Yeah.
And you know how it goes with those guys. Like, they usually don't find appreciation until a bit later in life. So if you watch a Mr. T interview now, you know, I want to thank my mama, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
But back then, it was the 80s. He probably actually thought he was B.A. Baracus.
I mean,
I have no idea.
After the A-Team and his role in Rocky III.
And it's not like Rowdy Roddy Piper and Humble really go well together
That's true.
So who knows? It's just two egos.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
It was a boxing match.
Yes. On top of that, it was a boxing match. Neither of these guys were actual boxers, although Mr. T played one in a movie.
But also...
a damn good one, though.
Mr. T, before he started acting...
Wasn't he
a...
was he a Golden Gloves guy?
I don't know.
I feel like now that I found out Baron Corbin is a Golden Gloves guy, anybody could
I feel like either he was... I can't remember how he...
I'm going to type in the word boxing to his work. Let's see here. First air...
What did he do before he started acting? Was he in like a strongman competitions or something like that?
Tough man competitions. Right, you're right. But then, for the end of these, a couple of these competitions, they ended up in a boxing ring.
Okay.
For a 2 minute round.
Piper was not a boxer.
No, he was not. But I mean, come on, neither was Mr. T.
Well, he wasn't a trained.
He was in a tough man competition where they threw him into a boxing ring.
Yeah, but I mean he didn't spend his whole life training to be a boxer. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But he probably had more experience boxing than Piper did.
Technically speaking, you're correct. I think.
So I remember when I was a kid, I used to go to the local video store and rent WrestleMania 1, WrestleMania 2 all the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I put WrestleMania 2 in for the first time and watched this match and thinking when I was, I don't know, 8, mm-hmm. 7 or 8. This wasn't a very good match.
Yeah.
It was really awkward.
Yeah.
It was super awkward because Piper didn't know how to throw a punch.
Yeah.
That looked like it would hurt. And then it was just really awkward for until what, four rounds or something like that?
So I like that you understood this is a crap match, but then when you saw Twin Dave Hebner's, you were like, this is brilliant story.
No, I didn't say it was brilliant. It was like, wow, this is nuts. This is crazy.
You're right about that, isn't it?
This is, we don't see this kind of stuff in wrestling in the 80s very often.
Piper had Cowboy Bob Orton and trainer Lou Duva, while T had Jumpin' Joe Frazier. Ooh, T has the edge there. I mean, Cowboy Bob Orton ain't going to teach nobody how to box.
Nope.
Let's see here. Yeah, one-on-one fight makes it harder to hide the fact that T wasn't, again, these are Scoops notes, wasn't used to performing like this, even if he looked the part. Yeah, Scoop sometimes does some stream of consciousness shit. He says, I love Piper throwing the stool at T. How is that not a disqualification? He said he threw it as hard as he could, angry.
Mr. T won by disqualification when Piper body slammed him because it was a boxing match,
yeah,
not a wrestling match.
Oh, man, it lasted four rounds. That's horrible. He says, both men do not look like boxers. They're throwing some sloppy. Yeah, what a mess. I mean, full disclosure, I didn't fucking watch this. I'm relying on Scoop's notes. But this is, well, this is kind of, well, like, look, you can take a look at this. Piper versus Mr. T in a boxing match in an early WrestleMania. Yeah, probably not a great match.
You know, we should also say this was a rematch of a tag match at WrestleMania 1. Yes,
which was Hogan and T versus Piper and King Kong Bundy?
No, Paul Orndorff.
Oh, Orndorff. That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Let's see here. I like this. It's Piper is quoted as saying that he had to carry the heavily winded actor, Mr. T, through parts of the match, and that T was supposed to have more offense, but he got tired. He said on Austin's podcast, the match was horrible. Even Piper said the match was horrible. Says rumor has it some of the punches were quite stiff because two of them didn't like each other.
Yep.
And apparently for a long time that was the case. So, yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
Three.
I love these last three matches, man. They're so bad. They're so bad that they're actually kind of entertaining when you look at them. Hogan versus Sting, Super Brawl 8, 1998. This is a rematch from their epically bad encounter at Starrcade 97.
Did you watch the intro video package to this pay-per-view?
Is it the really slow one?
It's like in some post-apocalyptic.
Right, yeah.
Which I don't get how that involves a Super Brawl.
I don't get that either. I don't know.
It was really cheesy.
It was all very good. Was that the one the dude was wearing like a Fallout mask?
Yeah.
That was this. Okay.
Yeah.
That was really weird.
Yeah, I didn't get that
I'll
at
be
all.
Honest, that was really weird. Super Brawl. That wasn't Hogan Warrior. Yeah, you're right. That was it. That is so weird. I kind of wanted to see what that was, where that was going though.
it was foreshadowing for the financial future of WCW.
Exactly. I didn't pay to see contract negotiations go wrong. Oh, that was a good one. Every once in a while, you come up with a good one.
Yeah.
This is the paper. It was so weird because I sort of skipped around a little bit. Scott Steiner turned on Rick Steiner. He was wearing white Big Papa Pump, like, singlet.
Yeah.
But his hair was still brown.
Yeah.
And, like, he's literally a completely different person with a dye job. Just a completely different person with a dye job. I like that Scoops gives us some info on the pay-per-view on the whole.
Oh, yeah.
And I like, this is my favorite part of the notes. Injuries at this pay-per-view. Louis Spicoli died a week before the event. That's not an injury, Scoop. Scoops. Louis Spicoli died. It's not an injury. I mean, it's like the biggest, the most injured that you can be. I guess. Oh, man. He was supposed to have a match that night. Rick Martel was supposed to win his match against Booker T. Why? Who's booking that crap?
Yeah, but Martel tore a ligament in his knee.
That's what happens when you hire 80-year-olds into your company. And then Steve Mongo McMichael received a broken... I didn't watch that one. He broke his arm in a match against a British Bulldog. That had to look nasty.
Yeah.
You can never break an arm and have it look like, oh, I can't tell what happened.
Yeah, usually it's pretty bad.
Usually you can see it's really bad. Let's see here.
So, as you said, it was a rematch from their match at Starrcade 97,
awful. This is Hogan at his peak, crazy with creative control power. And it's so ridiculous because he never lets anybody go over. He never does.
Starrcade, not cleanly, at least.
Never cleanly.
At Starrcade 97, he actually won that match.
Yeah.
He beat Sting until Bret Hart went in and reversed the decision because the ref counted too fast.
Slightly too fast. And Bret Hart comes down and, like, reverses the decision. And
Sting pins Hogan. Brett comes in, counts the pinfall.
Mm-hmm.
Sting wins.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They spent a year and a half building up the storyline between Sting and the NWO.
Yeah.
And then Hogan's like, no.
And then the next night, they like strip Sting of the title. They vacate the title.
This match was for the vacant title.
Yeah. It's so bad. And then let's see here. So we had, Screwy. And it was like Hogan was basically on top the entire time.
Yeah.
He was dominating. He dominated the entire match. Yeah. Let's see here. Yeah. He starts off beating up Sting. It's funny because like, I heard Michael Buffer's intro because I watched this yesterday. And then I go for my drink or something. And I turn back around and Hogan's already beating the crap out of Sting with his belt. It's so slow.
I know.
It's so slow. It's boring. Hogan preening a lot. Yeah, brother, look at me, bro.
I'm the man.
And he just wanders around.
I'm the man.
That's what it is. Hogan's matches at this point were just him wandering around.
Yelling, I'm the man.
He just wanders around yelling that shit. And then the NWO tries to interfere.
And early in the night, they turned on Macho Man.
Yeah.
Macho Man comes out the end, hits Hogan in the head with a spray paint can. Sorry, I can't talk. I've been done a lot of talking today.
Yeah.
But like the camera works so awful, you don't even see it.
You don't even see it happen. Exactly. Like it's on a long shot and you're like focusing on Sting in the foreground.
Yeah.
And you have to hear Tony Schiavone, what is Savage doing?
Oh, yeah, because Sting's in the foreground beating up people like Bryan Adams and Scott Norton.
The other 15 members of the NWO. And so I was painted because I read this in advance that, oh, he hit him with a spray can. Okay. And so I looked and it doesn't even look like he hits him.
I know.
He just sort of places it near his head.
Well, Hogan's already down on the mat.
Yeah.
And Macho slides in under the bottom rope. Kind of does a quick motion and then puts the can next to him.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And which here's the thing, though. If Macho Man is trying to help Sting win the match, hit him with the can, but don't leave the can in the ring because the ref's like, why is there a can in the ring?
Gently place it there. But then the funny thing is the ref doesn't even do that.
And it's Nick Patrick
who was the NWO ref!
But they mentioned this earlier in the match, or during the match, that he was fired or let go, and then J.J. Dillon rehired him, but with the caveat that he did his job correctly.
Yeah.
So he couldn't cheat for the NWO anymore.
Which
led to, I guess, some story beats where Hogan was yelling at him, it's me! It's Hollywood, brother!
Like, we know who you are.
Oh, you're just so bad.
You're the guy who moseys around the ring.
I know.
Saying, I'm the man! It's so fucking funny, though. It's so entertaining. And so anyways, Sting doesn't even get off a move after the spray can. He just turns around, sees Hogan taking a nap, and then doesn't he just pin him?
Yeah, and then he grabs the can, which if I'm a ref and I see Sting just win a match, and he's got a can of spray paint in his hand, I'm like, okay, well, you cheated.
Yeah, but he raises the hand of the can holding the spray can.
And then Sting spray paints WCW on Hogan.
As J.J. Dillon gives him the belt. And then I think after that, Sting didn't really do much after that. I think he might have won the belt like once after that. But he did. It's not like Sting had like a great run. The sad thing is, dude, here's the really, really sad thing about this. And I don't know if it's this one or our number one entry because they're very similar. It was like one, it's like 7 months later. But earlier in, I think, this pay-per-view, Chris Benoit DDP for the U.S. title. And God damn it, that was a hell of a match. You had Chris Benoit. You had Eddie Guerrero. Why? I totally get that Hogan wanted to keep his spot. But there was no... They could have so easily strategically built up Benoit, Booker T, all these guys...
Jericho, Eddie.
All those guys and use Hogan to get them over. And you can even strengthen Hogan doing that. There are ways to do
that.
And
it would give Hogan new opponents.
Yeah.
Instead of seeing him versus Flair, him versus Sting, him versus Macho Man.
Mm-hmm. And Goldberg is the one time they kind of did that right with.
Yep.
And then we saw how that turned out.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, if you let Goldberg get in there with Jericho, then you're giving Jericho some rub. And then Benoit, who wouldn't have wanted to see Benoit versus Goldberg? And I'm sure maybe they fought at some point.
Yeah.
Because I know Benoit eventually did get the belt, but it was too little too late and he ended up bolting. But at that time, during their peak, when the NWO was strongest, that's what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Nash has said, well, the point was with Goldberg to build the NWO back into something that he can fight.
Yeah.
Then he got injured with his arm. And who knows how that would have turned out.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there was a lot. I mean, I'm sure there was, like with Nash, for example, I'm sure there was good intentions there.
Yeah.
I'm sure he looked at himself and said, hey, you know, realistically, I've been a champion. I'm a pretty popular guy. You know, it makes sense for me to have the belt here and there.
Just the way in which things were carried out was not that great. It didn't really benefit anybody.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Number two. Lex Luger versus Yokozuna, WrestleMania 10 once again.
The main event, or sorry, the rematch to their main event at SummerSlam 93 when Luger won by countout and the locker room came out
and hoisted him up
on their shoulders and carried him around the ring as if he had actually won something.
Yeah. So I like whoever's idea was to have Yokozuna accept two challenges for his world title on the same night. Whoever said, and because by the time he faces Bret Hart, he's literally just falling off a rope and then getting pinned. You know, it's like, who's fucking fall? You know, Yokozuna, he needed to get his lawyers out. Be like, who booked me for two of these matches? But I think storyline, he accepted both challenges.
Yeah.
He's not the guy to be accepting stamina challenges. That's not supposed to be happening. Like we said earlier, Donnie Wahlberg was the guest ring announcer, and Rhonda Shear was the guest timekeeper. Mr. Perfect was the best thing about this.
Yes.
Because he was wearing the ref's stripes from head to toe.
Yeah, he had a Zubaz pants.
He was rocking the Zubaz pants, matching shirt. It was all just white and black stripes. It was amazing. Let's see here. I'm going to Scoop's notes.
Oh, this is why the match happened, because both Luger and Bret Hart won the Royal Rumble. So they both got to face the champion.
Again, if I'm Yokozuna, I'm like, make it a triple threat.
Yeah, have those two fight first.
Yeah, figure out a number one contender.
Yeah.
No time in history has this happened where the champion's like,
I'm a champ and I have to wrestle twice?
I have to wrestle twice tonight? I should be the main event in one match. So let's see here. I like the notes here. Slow build up, start with poking and punches. I don't think it ever got faster. Some long rest holds and slow assaults from Yoko for a somewhat shorter pay-per-view match. It doesn't say how long it is here.
It felt long.
It felt very long. Let's see here. And then, so the ending came with Mr. Perfect disqualifying Luger for doing this shit to him. Because Perfect was giving Luger shit. Because Luger had pinned Yoko, and Perfect, for some reason, just kept on checking on Cornette and Mr. Fuji. Like, Luger's literally pinning him, and Mr. Perfect keeps on doing this to Fuji. Get up, get up. And then he walks over to Cornette, and there's a pin attempt happening on a 600-pound man right in front of you. So I don't know if it's something he didn't see it. He's like, you know, if he wants to wave out the EMTs or something, if he's really concerned about Fuji.
Was Perfect just being a heel?
Probably. I don't know. I think he's just being perfect. And then, of course, afterwards, so he DQs Luger. He walks back, and Todd Pettengill, who is the most early 90s looking person I've ever seen in my life, he's got an earring and like kind of a weird mullet. You know, in the early 90s, you're getting out of the full mullet phase.
Yeah.
And he interviews Perfect to wait, why did you do that? And Perfect was giving a nonsensical answer. And the camera goes over and you see angry Lex Luger stalking down the hallway. And he starts yelling at Perfect. So I imagine it set up a feud between those two, but who cares? So anyways, just like, just so many what the fucks in this match.
Scoops makes a good point here. With matches like Owen Hart versus Bret Hart and the famous Razor Ramon HBK ladder match.
Absolutely.
Also on this card. It's, you know, this fight, it's about bout wasn't memorable at all.
We've
been talking way too much today.
Oh, yeah, that's all right. One more entry.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
Number one.
One.
Hollywood Hulk Hogan versus Warrior. He was not Ultimate Warrior, just Warrior because he changed his fucking name there.
Mm-hmm.
At Halloween Havoc 1998. So we never got an official Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior rematch.
Not in WWF, no.
In the WWF. So, obviously, Hollywood Hogan, looking to solidify his legacy as the best ever, needed to get a win against the Warrior. So he was brought in for those purposes.
Yes.
Unfortunately for Hogan, Warrior didn't really care about all that. Didn't care about what Hogan wanted to do. And so this match is literally just Warrior no-selling everything Hogan does. Like, Hogan slams him, turns around and says,
I'm the man!
And Warrior's already up. And Hogan, like, there's one point where Warrior, you know, and you're in wrestling and you do this.
Yeah.
The other guy does that.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Hogan didn't do that because Warrior put his hand up and Hogan just looked around.
I'm the man!
And then didn't grapple at all.
Oh, my goodness.
And then when they did grapple, nobody knew which direction to go in. It was a mess. Like,
it sounds like someone, like a tryout match.
Yeah, it was. But even tryout matches. Like, there are certain fundamentals in wrestling.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like I would think. I've never played with a Ouija board before, but from what I understand with a Ouija board, somebody on the board is moving the thing around.
Yeah, if not consciously, then subconsciously,
somebody's
yes.
Somebody's going to be the heel there. Somebody's going to be like, I'm going to fuck with people. That's just the way Ouija boards go.
Yeah.
In wrestling, you grapple, and you just sort of feel it out.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to lead, and somebody's not, and you just feel it out, and you go with the flow.
Yeah.
There was zero flow here. It was hilarious.
See, I remember watching this match when it happened, or I remember I watched it.
Yeah, no, we watched it together.
But I don't remember this fireball spot.
Oh, my God. You'd remember it if you saw it.
Okay.
It was so bad. So, 3/4 of the way through the match, Hogan gets some flash paper, which I want to say he's had history with before. King of the Ring versus Yokozuna in his last pay-per-view. I think there was a flash photography bulb that, like, exploded in his face or some shit. Well, this, he had some flash paper, and he was trying to light it and throw it at Warrior. But it just sort of blew up right here. And when I say blow up, it's just a little flash.
Yeah.
And Warrior's 5 feet away. And so they're like, what did he do? This is the great. This is why Heenan is the greatest ever. Because Shivani says, what was he doing with that? What was he doing? That was some flash paper. He was going to try to blind the Warrior. And Heenan says, he was trying to explode that man. Heenan's fucker. And you know Heenan knew that it was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, you know that he got a kick out of that himself. So, yeah, he tried to throw it, but it didn't work. And so I suspect, because about 5 minutes later, because there was like some interference.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, Hogan gave Warrior a low blow.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that low blow was substituting Warrior trying to be blind. Because he had to be incapacitated somehow.
Yeah.
So we have here, according to Scoop's notes, let's see here. All sorts of shit. I like that Scoops knows this too. Warrior looks like he knows how to sell a thing. I didn't realize this. This Hogan came up with the fireball spot and ended up burning his own mustache in the process. I didn't notice that it was that close to his face. Let's see here. Giant interfered. Ref got knocked out. Bischoff comes out. Hogan did bleed. That's right. The match did end with Hogan's nephew, of course, Horace Hogan, who's supposed to be a face because Hogan had beat the crap out of him before.
Yeah.
But, you know, blood runs thicker than water is the theme here. He hit Warrior with a crappy chair shot. Hogan got the win. Then was the fucked up part because Horace starts dousing the Warrior in lighter fluid.
Yeah.
We already know Hogan has a match.
Yeah.
So I guess they were literally going to set the Warrior on fire at this point. And then I forget why he didn't. Probably because it would have been really bizarre and dark if they did that.
Yeah.
Let's see here.
The Warrior's whole time in WCW was odd.
Clusterfuck is one way to describe
it.
Yeah. I like this, though, according to the Scoops notes. It says, two do not get along much, and supposedly we're not working well together in the ring due to both wanting to do things their way. And that's exactly how this match plays out. It is obvious that they have wildly different versions of how this story is supposed to go. And I like that he says here, one critic called it a passive-aggressive wankfest. It is a very passive-aggressive match. Like, who doesn't benefit from matching this?
I know.
You know, it's like, this is Hogan not wanting to do that.
Yeah.
I'll
have to watch this one again.
Oh, and then, this was DDP Goldberg for the title
yeah.
was supposed to be the main event. And I think like it overran by 15 minutes or something.
And they pushed the title match.
They the match happened, but everybody's pay-per-view went out. So they had to refund millions of dollars. Because this probably went long. Yeah. How does that happen? Oh, man. So much
WCW
crap.
Was dysfunctional, to say the least.
I know. It's amazing. But being able to recall this shit is fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Anyways, those were the worst matches. Be sure to check out the best rematches.
That we did yesterday, yeah.
And, yeah, maybe we'll find out if Brock Goldberg 2 belongs on one of these lists tonight.
Yeah.
Or in the past, depending on when you're watching this.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyways, until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.